the World Health Organization has been working on the ground in Zimbabwe for a while. So now, what is your overall take on the state of healthcare system in Zimbabwe and the complaints from striking doctors that they are incapacitated, referring to poor equipment and salaries?
Okay, thank you. Those are actually two questions. What has WHO, what is our assessment of the state of health in Zimbabwe? We have just supported the Ministry of Health and Child Care and other partners working in health in Zimbabwe to conduct a review of the implementation of the National Health Strategy that covered the period 2016 to 2020. As you know, this strategy has all the components of what the government and we, the partners, felt were the most pertinent and important programs, activities that would help improve the health status of the people in Zimbabwe. So this exercise is just being completed as we speak. A team of both international and national experts were in Zimbabwe in the last couple of months, went around the country, talked to different stakeholders to really understand where we are in the health sector. Now, it may interest you to know, and it may not be of any surprise, that there are some areas where things seem to be going in the right direction. The targets, if not met, are on the right track, going in the right trajectory. And there are some areas, of course, where things are not yet are not as good as we had hoped for many factors that will be detailed in the report. So I would say it is a mixed picture. Last year, WHO released a report called The State of Health in the African Region. Of course, that report was released last year, which means that it used data that was available until probably the end of 2017, early 2018. And again, at that time, Zimbabwe seemed to be achieving better results than many other countries in the region in some areas, but in some areas there were gaps. So it is a mixed picture. We are hoping that we'll have this report out in the next few weeks, and there will be a proper dissemination, and everybody will have access and will be able to interact with the findings. So that's what I would say in terms of WHO's assessment of the health sector. Your second question was around the complaints by the doctors and the strike.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
As you may know, the complaints of the doctors are around factored around the economy, the current economic situation of the country, which is really a higher level than just the health sector. Their main complaints, as you may know, are around their payments, their conditions of service. So these factors are affecting many sectors, not just health. In fact, all aspects of life. We are very, very hopeful that proper dialogue between the doctors, the government, the employers can happen, because again, as we have been informed, that the government, using their own resources as well as through partnerships with other countries, are trying to address the issues of working conditions, rehabilitating at facilities at the health, the hospitals, so that the doctors can have what they need to work with and provide the services for the people. So we in WHO are really hopeful that this dialogue can happen. We understand that the issues around the economy, the issues around remuneration, will also need maybe the interventions of other sectors beyond the health sector, beyond the Ministry of Health and Child Care. And some reasonable consensus can be achieved so that doctors can get back to work and provide the much needed services for the population. Yes.
Yes. So what are your concerns around the impact of the strikes on patients? We hear that many patients are being turned away, some of them with very serious conditions.
So we are concerned that the most vulnerable people who are in most need of services would not be able to access the services that they would require if their doctors keep away from work. So that is a big concern for us. So that is why we would hope that this could be resolved and they return to work soonest.
Are you actually recording any increases in the number of deaths as a result of lack of access to proper care for patients?
No, we don't have such information. We don't have such information as of now. No, we don't have that information.
What role does the WHO play in a situation such as what is happening in Zimbabwe? Because the doctors have been staging strikes for years, and one of their consistent complaints has been incapacitation. What is the WHO's role in capacitating hospitals?
So the WHO, as you know, works with governments, works with partners to, you know, to bring evidence, to bring guidance, to, you know, bring the best practices from different places to strengthen the health systems of countries. So we have shared advice, shared best practices that have been used. As I have already mentioned to you, one of the recommendations that WHO makes to countries in these situations is for the key actors to engage in dialogue. The key actors are usually the employer, the government, the professional organization, professional associations of the medical personnel themselves, you know, people who are associated with the labor unions. Usually these are national actors because this provision of health services is the responsibility of governments. WHO does not provide health services except in very, you know, in situations where governments are unable, like in situations of conflict, in situations of, you know, massive disruptions due to, you know, either massive outbreaks, massive emergency situations. But in a normal situation, governments have to play this role, and we share advice and guidance with governments. One of the things that we have seen that has worked very well in other countries that have had similar situations, and I think we have seen it also here in Zimbabwe in the past, is when the interministerial or multisectorial approach to addressing this you know, situations raised by the doctors is adopted, it tends to, people tend to find common ground and resolve strikes. So that's what we recommend.
Now, the recent problems with access to water and proper sanitation has also raised concern around a possible outbreak of cholera, typhoid, dysentery, and other waterborne diseases. So now, can you speak around this?
Thank you. So again, we as for water and sanitation, this is beyond just the World Health Organization. We are working together with other agencies in the United Nations and other development partners, together with the government. Of course, the government being in the driving seat and taking the lead in trying to ensure the restoration of delivery of safe water, ensure that sanitation and hygiene are promoted. You may also know that as we come to the rainy season, this is the time that the risk of outbreaks of waterborne diseases like cholera and typhoid are increased. So we are working together to ensure that these risks are minimized. Of course, there's the issue of the infrastructure that is required, which requires, you know, significant level of investment and which will take some time. But there's also some of the immediate, you know, provision of immediate, you know, needs to address good quality, safe water through, you know, ensuring that the required chemicals are available. And so it is, again, government is in the driving seat. We as partners are supporting these efforts to ensure that the population has access to safe water and can, you know, adopt hygiene and proper sanitation.
Now, let's turn to HIV/AIDS. Zimbabwe's HIV prevalence rates have been on the decline for a while. What is the percentage now, and what are the strategies being implemented to keep the numbers low?
Thank you very much. Yes, Zimbabwe has made significant progress. There are different a number of different interventions that have been adopted, and in fact, we have just in the last 2-3 weeks had a team of up to 100 Zimbabwean and foreign experts that have done a very comprehensive assessment of all the different interventions that have been you know, implemented over the last couple of years in terms of reducing new cases of HIV and ensuring that those who are infected with HIV get the appropriate care and treatment that they require. Again, this work just was completed last week, if I recall well, and a number of very good recommendations. Unfortunately, in the space of this interview, I cannot highlight them, but the aim is to ensure that the progress that has been made to date is accelerated, and any of the gaps that have been identified rapidly addressed. Of course, in some areas, there's room for improvement, but as you rightly said, the progress to date has been fairly substantial. So we are all very keen to ensure that we learn what worked very well, what has contributed to this progress, sustain that, and even do better. And in those areas where there's still room for improvement, you know, either learn from different parts of the country where they are doing better, or learn from other countries in the sub-region what may have worked that could be considered here in Zimbabwe. Over.
Mm-hmm. And how close is Zimbabwe to reaching the 1990 UN goal?
Good, thank you. For the first 90, Zimbabwe has surpassed that. 91% of people who are expected to have HIV know their status. About 90% have received treatment, and close to 80% have a suppressed viral load. So amongst adults, Zimbabwe is around 80. This is as of the end of 2018. So very, very close to achieving the 90-90-90. The only area that needs to come up is the achieving viral suppression, the last 90. Amongst children, the situation is not that close. We are still gathering the information for children. So as of 2017, almost 80%, it was 80 6 day amongst children. But as we see for the adults who are the bulk, Zimbabwe is really very close to achieving the target.
How can Zimbabwe actually achieve the target in terms of suppressing the viral load? What can be done?
So, again, there is a very good strategy that has been identified to ensure that viral load testing is brought as close to the people as possible. Zimbabwe is rolling out viral load testing. As it gets closer in more health facilities all over the country, people would be able to have their viral load tested faster, get their results faster, and if need be, have their treatment modified to bring their viral load lower. So a strategy has been identified. It's being rolled out right now, and we expect that it will have the desired results within the shortest time possible.
And does the WHO provide some drugs in terms of, ARVs?
The main providers of ARVs are the Zimbabwe government, the PEPFAR, the U.S. government through PEPFAR, and the Global Fund. WHO does not provide ARV drugs.
October is the Breast Cancer Awareness Month. What is the WHO doing to help fight breast cancer?
Okay. Again, the Zimbabwe has made good progress. We have draft policy already led by the government. There's a lot of efforts at increasing screening. As we all know, the main one of the main interventions for cancer is regular screening, so that any cancers are detected early when they can be effective treatment and the cancer caught early in its tracks before it spreads. So that is the mainstay of our efforts with government, strengthening early screening for early diagnosis. And we are happy that this is being done. And other than breast cancer, as you also know, the government and other NGOs, including Her Excellency the First Lady, is very, very active in screening for other common cancers like cervical cancer. So this is the mainstay of our interventions, and that's what we are supporting.
We understand the most prevalent cases of cancer are cervical cancer and also increasingly prostate cancer. What prevention strategies are being implemented by the WHO?
Good. So WHO, together with the government, are promoting, one, early diagnosis, two, particularly for the case of cervical cancer, vaccination against the human papilloma virus amongst young girls especially. We know that infection with this virus predisposes girls in their years to develop cervical cancer. So we are very, very happy that we has adopted the vaccination with human papilloma virus. Two campaigns have been held which have been extremely successful, achieving very, very high coverage. And we expect that this will, as this cohort of girls grows up, the risk of developing cervical cancer will be much real. For prostate cancer, again, a lot of health promotion is being undertaken. Men are being encouraged to go for screening, regular screening, as they approach their 40s and 50s. This is being popularized in a lot of health promotion activities that are currently ongoing and which will be intensified during this awareness month.
Why does it seem as if prostate cancer and cervical cancer are actually increasing in Zimbabwe? Is there any push factor,
As you may know, non-communicable diseases as a whole are increasing as communicable diseases get controlled, or the lifestyle is getting better. People are adopting a more Western lifestyle. Non-communicable diseases, including cancers, increase. So this is not unique to Zimbabwe. This is happening virtually across the whole of sub-Saharan Africa and many parts of the world. As you know, right now, as I'm speaking to you, 7 out of every 10 deaths happening in our developing countries are due to non-communicable diseases. In the past, communicable diseases were the major cause of death, but this trend is now changing. And again, part of the way we need to address this changing trend is to ensure that our health promotion activities, our health services are designed in such a way that they would help the population, prevent these conditions. And if these conditions do occur, ensure that they are detected as early as possible and addressed within the shortest time possible, because that is the way that we would keep the population healthy.
In light of Ebola and the rise in non-communicable diseases, what potential health crisis gives you some challenges?
Yes. So you have stated it very well. The risks of public health emergencies due to outbreaks of highly pathogenic organisms like Ebola, like viral hemorrhagic fevers, that is a very big challenge that we have to all be prepared for, especially in sub-Saharan Africa where we are. And we must commend our countries because they are investing a lot in preparing for these kind of public health emergencies. But it is not only emergencies from outbreaks. We are now having emergencies that are caused by, climatic changes. You know very well that Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Malawi were hit by Cyclone Idai, which generated public health emergencies in the three countries, and including Zimbabwe. So, again, here in Zimbabwe, the government, with the support of the citizens, with support of the communities, the private sector, partners, the churches, did an enormous job to respond and minimize the risk of public health crisis like outbreaks after the cyclone Idai. Unfortunately, we know that these climatic conditions that predispose to the cyclone are going to continue. So it's very, very key for countries to continue to invest in to respond to these type of crisis emergencies and ensure that they do not generate, increased morbidity, suffering amongst the population. So preparedness is key. And again, here in Zimbabwe, we are happy that this is being given the adequate attention it deserves. For non-communicable diseases, as you have rightly pointed out, we also need to enhance our capacity and ability to address these issues. One of the key things that has been a challenge for us is having the right data, having the right evidence to guide policy, to guide programming, to guide mobilization of resources. Again, I'm happy to let you know that Zimbabwe is planning to undertake a nationwide survey to collect key information on non-communicable diseases. This will help guide the development of very appropriate policies and programs that should help keep these risks in check.
Dr. Alex Kasasira, thank you so much for granting us this interview. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Dube. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.